I'm Tracy Sable. Welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly.
Equal protection, 14th Amendment protection for every person born and unborn in America.
Staying the course to speak up for the voiceless as pro-lifers gear up for the Celebration of Life rally, we learn about new campaigns to promote life. Plus, analysis on the Supreme Court ruling on mifepristone and expert opinion on legal challenges that may have more success in limiting the abortion pill.
We're hopeful that judges across the country will protect women and girls.
Clear recognition of the pro-life beliefs that are at stake here.
An abortion mandate and gender ideology provision blocked by the courts for now. A look at the lawsuits filed to protect women and mothers.
Where we do not need the help is with killing the unborn.
Help needed to promote life, not death in Haiti. The abortion law never voted on by the people or a legislative body that's about to take effect.
As he said, this was a textbook example of an agency overstepping its statutory authority to enact a requirement that Congress had not intended.
A judge provides temporary relief for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, several other Catholic organizations, and the states of Mississippi and Louisiana from having to comply with a federal agency's abortion mandate. In just a week from when we first brought you this story, a judge blocked the regulation by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission that would have forced the USCCB and others to support employee abortions against their religious beliefs or state laws. The regulations of the EEOC issued in April and which took effect this week were added to the Pregnancy Workers Fairness Act. Federal Judge David Joseph said in his order, quote, if Congress had intended to mandate that employers accommodate elective abortions under the Pregnancy Workers Fairness Act, it would have spoken clearly when enacting the statute. For now, the mandate is paused while the legal challenge plays out. The judge's decision this week comes after a similar lawsuit filed by 17 states against the EEOC for the same abortion mandate was dismissed. On Monday, a judge in Kentucky blocked the Biden administration's rewrite of Title IX. The rewrite, which sparked lawsuits from more than 20 states, expands the definition of protected class to include gender identities. It is yet another mandate implemented by a government agency, in this case, the Department of Education, without any congressional action.
So the Biden administration is attempting to redefine sex in Title IX to include gender identity, which would gut women's equal opportunities. It would threaten their safety and their fairness. It would open up restrooms, locker rooms, even hotels on overnight stays to males who identify as females.
Alliance Defending Freedom has joined several states in their lawsuits challenging the Title IX rewrite. Judges granted preliminary injunctions in two of the cases, which represent 10 states, highlighted right there on your screen. Tennessee, Louisiana, and Montana, just to name a few, will not have to comply with the law, which takes effect on August 1st. However, that may change when a ruling comes down. These lawsuits come on the heels of the Supreme Court's decision on the abortion pill, mifepristone. Justices rejected the challenge to the Food and Drug Administration's lifting of safety regulations on the pill. The FDA allows the abortion pill to be prescribed via telemedicine and delivered by mail.
The FDA's own label says that roughly 1 in 25 women who take this drug will end up in the emergency room, and that up to 7% will require surgery.
Mifepristone is used in more than 50% of abortions in the United States. With this decision, abortion pills will continue to be available to patients without an in-person doctor's visit and received through the mail. Bishop Michael Burbidge, chairman of the USCCB Committee on Pro-Life Activities, released a statement on Tuesday saying in part, quote, the FDA unlawfully cut corners to put abortion pills on the market and then reduced safety protocols, putting the health of women at risk. And joining us now is Mary Fiorito, a Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. She is an attorney with an expertise on abortion law. Mary, great to be with you. The justices ruled unanimously that the doctors do not have standing to bring the case because they don't prescribe or use mifepristone. That said, you know, where does the pro-life fight go from here when it comes to the abortion pill?
Well, as you said, Tracy, it was a ruling on standing, which was unanimous. This is a legal principle that comes from Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution that requires that anyone who brings a case to federal court has to have a very specific and causal interest that the court can resolve on their behalf, because there's good public policy reason for this, of course, because we don't want people just willy-nilly being able to bring lawsuits in a federal court, tying up the court's time. So the plaintiffs themselves, those who are bringing the lawsuits, have to have a real vested and personal interest in the matter at hand. And in this unanimous ruling, the court decided that the pro-life doctors and medical associations who brought this lawsuit against the FDA simply didn't have that kind of direct connection because, as you mentioned, they don't prescribe mifepristone, they don't use it with their patients, they do not provide abortions. But that doesn't mean that other plaintiffs might not be able to bring a case back to the courts, but they'll just have to do it with different plaintiffs.
Yeah, Mary, as you know, the loosening of the FDA's safety requirements wasn't addressed in this case. Your thoughts?
Not at all.
Yeah,
no.
And I want to get your thoughts on that. And do you think that that should be the focus of a new challenge against the pill?
Oh, absolutely. These are very dangerous drugs. And when you look at them in the context of how they are used and prescribed in the United States right now, no in-person doctor visits. They can be sent through the mail. I mean, the potential for harm to pregnant women is really significant. I mean, one example would be an ectopic pregnancy. If a woman is not screened to make certain she doesn't have an ectopic pregnancy, she could die if she takes mifepristone. And you know, women are taking these pills in their homes, in their dormitory rooms, where they may not have immediate access to emergency care if they need it. So it is something that has to be addressed. I think the FDA was incredibly reckless, loosening the very reasonable restrictions that were placed on the pill when it was initially approved in the year 2000. And, you know, something has to be done. But, you know, we have to play by the rules as well. They have to be plaintiffs that have the standing to bring the lawsuit to the court so that the court can look at it and address it in the proper way.
Yeah, Mary Ann, in the court's opinion, there was a mention about the rights of doctors to object to abortion. And there are exceptions from providing abortions in emergency settings, subject of another pending case that's before the Supreme Court this term. Do you think this could be maybe a foreshadow of things to come at the court?
Oh, you know, it's kind of hard to read the tea leaves. The other case that you're referring to is the EMTALA case, which has to do with emergency medical treatment. When a pregnant woman presents in an emergency room, does a doctor who treats her have to provide an abortion for her if she wants one? It's a little more complicated legally. But I'm not sure that this particular case, because the court was so specific and narrow in its ruling, making it very clear they were not reaching the merits of the case. They were not speaking about the FDA's actions in any way. They were simply, you know, saying you were the wrong people to bring this case. That's very frustrating, I think, for pro-lifers, because there have been numbers of occasions where abortion clinics have been able to bring lawsuits for their potential clients. And so there seems, to me at least, to be a little bit of a double standard operating here. But I also think the court is being very careful in not showing any kind of prejudice or favoritism towards pro-life organizations or doctors. And I think if we do it the right way, the way that the court is telling us it needs to be done, I think they would reasonably hear that kind of request, again, because these drugs are so dangerous and do have the potential to hurt many women if they're not reined in a little bit.
Now, Mary, thank you so much for your insights. Good to be with you. God bless.
Thank you.
While mifepristone will remain on the market, so will the abortion pill reversal treatment. The reversal pill has helped many women save their babies' lives after they have taken the abortion pill and then changed their minds. Abortion pill reversal and the pregnancy centers that offer them often come under attack from pro-abortionists. The Attorney General of New York, Letitia James, is suing multiple pregnancy centers in the Empire State for promoting abortion pill reversal, which she says is unproven medicine. Many of those pregnancy centers have countersued. But some lawmakers on Capitol Hill are working to support mothers in need. The More Opportunities for Moms to Succeed, or MOMS Act, would establish a federal database of pregnancy resource centers, adoption agencies, funding for healthcare entities that would help mothers, and list grant programs to expand care. Alexandra DeSanctis of the Ethics and Public Policy Center has studied the pro-life laws across across the nation and written extensively on abortion. She recently spoke with Monsi Alvarado, president and COO of EWTN News, about the state of abortion and the pro-life movement in America and what is needed to effect change.
Thank you for joining us, Alexandra. We're getting close to the two-year anniversary of the overturning of Roe versus Wade. How has the abortion discussion changed or shifted in these 2 years?
Well, I think what we've witnessed is what, observers on both sides of the aisle predicted the entire time we had Roe in place, which was the American people never got to decide on this issue. It was really taken out of their hands in 1973. The Supreme Court issued this edict, essentially, and enforced abortion on demand on the entire country. Now we're watching an American people shaped by 50 years of Roe trying to shape their own abortion policy. And so there's been a lot of contention. There's been a lot of states trying to protect unborn children from, very early on in pregnancy. There have been states trying to essentially codify abortion in their state constitutions. There's a lot of division. A lot of people, I think, still kind of unsure where they come down on it.
Absolutely. And this division is also reflected on Capitol Hill, where this conversation has really centered around women who don't want to be pregnant or the right not to be pregnant. How is this a twisted vision of health care?
Well, I think what we're kind of missing here in this conversation is that pregnancy is not a disease, right? Pregnancy is a natural outcome of a healthy female body, right? It's the outcome of a natural act. And yet folks on the other side of this issue speak about pregnancy as though it's somehow, dysfunction, or there's something abnormal about the female body, as though the kind of male mode of being human is normative and ideal. And women who become pregnant, particularly if they don't want to, this is somehow then a disease. And so we have to be able to get rid of this. And through that lens, we're supposed to think of abortion as some form of true healthcare. But of course, healthcare heals. Healthcare treats disease. Healthcare cures. Killing a human being with no medical basis is never actually healthcare.
So there are some treatments then that pro-abortion advocates are saying will be illegal if pro-life laws are put in place. What is at the center of that debate?
So I think since Roe, we've seen this claim from abortion proponents that if pro-life laws are put in place, women aren't going to be able to get life-saving health care, pregnant women. This is simply false. And in fact, right after Roe, I wrote an article going through the text of every state law that protects unborn children. And they all have explicit language saying this does not cover situations where a mother needs life-saving care. So, for example, with an ectopic pregnancy or if an early delivery is needed for some reason for the mother's health, that's always legal. There's no reason why a doctor can't act to save a mother's life. But that's not an abortion, right? A direct abortion is intentionally killing the unborn child, and that's never medically necessary.
Now, Alexandra, crisis pregnancy centers, which do provide that kind of care, are being sued over a life-saving treatment that reverses the effects of the abortion pill, giving moms the choice to save their baby's life. How is this emblematic of where pro-abortion advocates have taken this issue?
It's really unbelievable. I mean, these people on the other side describe themselves often as pro-choice. And yet when it comes down to it, for these women who've started the chemical abortion protocol and regret their choice and want to somehow save their baby if they can, the answer from the abortion side is, or pro-abortion side is, no, you can't, right? We're not going to allow you to access this perfectly safe treatment that has been proven to actually be quite effective at preventing or rather halting a chemical abortion in progress. And their answer is that choice is not okay. We don't want you to know about it. We don't want to have to tell you about it, and we're certainly not going to help provide it.
Alexandra, in these discussions about resources for moms, abortion access is now also being added to pregnancy resource bills like the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, which now includes accommodations for abortions. Do taxpayers who don't want to pay for abortions have any protections?
Well, ostensibly we do still have the Hyde Amendment, and many people in Congress, Republicans at least, still support the idea that we should, forbid the direct reimbursement of abortion. But unfortunately, that money is fungible. And so if any money is going to abortion providers in our country, which it is, federal money, state money in many cases, we can't really avoid the fact that taxpayers are going to be funding this in some way, shape or form.
So then how should the pro-life movement act now that we are 2 years into this unthinkable victory?
Well, I think that it's a multi-pronged approach. We do still have to keep pushing the best laws that we can at the state level, at the federal level, too. There's room for Congress to act here. I think we've learned over the past 50 years and certainly over the last two that what we really need is cultural change, right? We have to work towards creating a society where women don't want abortion, where we're able to say, look, abortion takes an innocent human life, but it's also bad for women. Women are not helped by this. This is not a solution to women's problems. And I think if we become better at making that argument, at supporting women, the more we do that, the less we're going to see people wanting abortion.
Well, we're grateful for your work on this issue. Thank you so much, Alexandra.
Thank you.
On Monday, June 24th, we will celebrate the two-year anniversary of the Dobbs decision that officially overturned Roe versus Wade. The historic decision reverberated not just across the United States, but around the world. In many states, pro-life trigger laws immediately took effect. In other states, lawmakers were quick to write up protections for access to abortion. Internationally, countries reacted with statements or moves by lawmakers to either protect abortion or protect the lives of the unborn. The Dobbs decision is being celebrated this weekend in Washington, D.C., over several days, including a conference on Friday, followed by a gala the same evening. And the big day, Saturday, will be the rally at the Lincoln Memorial. This video from last year shows the huge crowd. The rally is free, and featured speakers will include those from Live Action, 40 Days for Life, Sidewalk Advocates for Life, and Kristen Hawkins, president of Students for Life America and Students for Life Action. And we are joined now by Kristen Hawkins, who can give us a preview of what we can expect this weekend. Good to see you, my friend. So how many people are you guys expecting this rally, and how does it really impact the pro-life movement?
Sure. Well, we're preparing for thousands at National Celebrate Life Weekend at the rally at the Lincoln Memorial this Saturday. We'll also have a conference that Then Number Nine and Sidewalk Advocates is taking the helm on that starts tomorrow, Friday, and also a gala featuring the Daily Wire's Matt Walsh, which is tomorrow night. And the entire weekend of events is important for the pro-life movement because, one, we need to celebrate the victory of lives saved and the tens of thousands of lives that we know have been spared from the violence of abortion because of the Dobbs decision, and remind ourselves as a pro-life movement that our work, our dedication, our labor towards this cause has reaped lives saved. And we need to celebrate that and, you know, challenge ourselves to do more, especially in this critical election year. But the other reason we need to gather this weekend, what's so critical about this weekend, is we need to show leaders in Washington, D.C., especially our friends in the Republican Party, why we are still marching forward in this mission and why we have so much more to do and how we expect them to live up to the promises of the pro-life platform that's there in the Republican National Committee's charter to make sure we finally accomplish our complete vision in the pro-life movement, which is equal protection, 14th Amendment protection for every person born and unborn in America.
Yeah, and Kristen, as you know, the vote to save the unborn, that's going to be on many ballots this November. What are the grassroots efforts, that is, to kind of get the word out in each state? What's being done?
There's so much going on. You know, our team at Students for Life Action has been active at Students for Life America. We're already active on campuses. We were there this spring on campuses talking about the ballot referendum. We've already been door knocking in states. Other national groups, and many of the state Right to Life or state pro-life organizations have stepped up to lead. The challenge that we face in 2024 is that there's so many fights. There's not just one state where we can funnel and channel all of our resources into. This is a fight a number of states, 10 plus states. And there's a couple of states that are kind of, we're still not sure if it's even going to be on the ballot yet. But states like Florida, Missouri, Arizona, those are going to be critical states for the pro-life movement. And I encourage you, if you're watching, make sure you contact every person you know in those states and tell them to vote no. These are late term abortion ballot referenda. Tell, you know, encourage folks, and you yourself who's watching, get involved, whether it's praying, whether it's donating to one of the multiple organizations, or just speaking out in your social media. This is an all hands on deck situation for the entire pro-life movement.
Absolutely. And so much has been done, so much needs to be done. How do we help to continue to change the hearts and minds of those Americans to really recognize the dignity of human life, you know, from the moment of conception?
Well, you know, we just launched a new campaign at Times Square 2 weeks ago called Almost Aborted. And we have a Times Square billboard running this summer, and also billboards in these ballot referendum states, as well as digital and online commercials and ads. And these are stories of people who everyone says, you know, when there's a debate about abortion, we naturally write off, sadly, children, humans who were conceived in sexual assault. as if that somehow justifies aborting them. We write off so many individuals, children who are diagnosed in utero with adverse prenatal diagnoses or diseases that we say, okay, fine, abortion maybe should be legal for these cases. We want to introduce to America, the world, these stories, these faces of the exception. And this is one of our ways that we're fighting back during these ballot referendum, is the other side is always so keen on using a story, using one woman's story, as we saw at the State of the Union, for example, with President Biden. He brought a woman, Kate Cox, a mother who was diagnosed, her child was diagnosed in utero with having Edwards syndrome, trisomy 18, which is deadly, but children can survive. I know children in their teens who have Edwards syndrome. She fought against the state of Texas that said you can't abort a child simply because of his or her chromosomes. And she ended up going across state lines, getting an abortion. And she was praised by the abortion industry, by Democrats, by President Biden at the State of the Union, as if she was some heroine. We need to tell the other side of the story. Meet the children, children like Faith in our Almost Aborted campaign, who also has trisomy 18 and has an amazing life, and whose family is so blessed that she is with us today. Those are the conversations we need to be having.
All right. And definitely we do. Thank you so much, Kristen. Always good to be with you. Thank you for what you do. God bless.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Coming up, the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere is set to legalize abortion.
Abortion is not health care.
I sit down with pro-life advocate Jonathan Alexander about how the law was pushed through and the foreign influences he says helped to shape it.
When given the opportunity to choose life and being able to bring that life into the world, but also knowing that there is a social structure to help support that child, Haitians will choose life.
And choosing life is the culture in Haiti, but a new law set to take effect soon is extremely countercultural, a law legalizing abortion. Well, the law was never voted on by a parliament or the people. It was passed by executive decree by President Jovenel Moïse in 2020 before he was assassinated the following year. The enactment was then postponed due to widespread protest until this year. Abortion is mostly banned in Haiti, only allowed in order to protect a mother's health. This law will legalize abortion in all circumstances until the 12th week of pregnancy. There will be no limit on gestation for cases of rape or incest. It goes further, legalizing abortion for mental health reasons, which means a mother could choose abortion up until the moment of birth. And the date is set to take effect June 24th, 2024. That is the anniversary of the overturning of Roe. There is a chance it may be postponed past that date. Jonathan Alexander, Senior Counsel for Governmental Affairs for Liberty Council, is a pro-life advocate who has worked to counter this decree. As a first-generation American of Haitian descent, this cause is close to his heart. I sat down with him this week to talk about the progression of this law. Well, Jonathan, thanks so much for being here. We appreciate it. So tell us exactly, when did this vote happen?
Well, so this is occurring as far back as 2022. The then president at the time, through the impetus of really some European nations, sought to reverse Haiti's penal code. So Haiti has had a long system of criminalizing certain things and not allowing certain things in this country. The president at the time sort of disbanded parliament, didn't hold a vote for the Senate, and was ruling by military fiat, basically saying might is right in this country. And in doing so, he implemented or attempted to implement a number of these laws that are countercultural, certainly against what the Haitian people wanted, amongst them being this abortion law that would allow abortion up to 12 weeks for any reason, and then up until birth if there was a sort of de facto abortion for mental reasons. So this president, after having disbanded parliament, not listening to the judiciary, wanted to put forward this criminal code.
Yeah, what do the people of Haiti think about this? I know it's a predominantly Roman Catholic country.
Yeah, it's a country that's certainly spiritual. It's a country that is Roman Catholic, many Protestants there as well. And during that time, the summer of 2022, there were
upwards of 100,000 protesters in the street that were fighting against this portion of the criminal code, but also many other of these cultural changes that this president unilaterally wanted to do. And I can't stress that enough. This wasn't a groundswell. It wasn't motivation by the people. It wasn't something from organic where individuals are saying we need this change. No, they've existed for hundreds of years, not allowing abortion and other crimes against humanity within their country. This president unilaterally jumped in and wanted to change that.
Jonathan, where is this coming from then?
Yeah, that's a good question. Certainly the United States does not have its hands clean. We've seen us operate in areas like Africa, you know, exporting all sorts of things, including some of the worst of our culture in abortion. And I think we do have our hands dirty when it comes to Haiti as well. But Canada, Belgium, France are all countries that have tried to have an influence on Haiti when it comes to their culture. Once again, this is not coming from the people. This isn't organic. And anytime the people are aware that this is going on, you'll see them animate and take to the streets against what a president tried to do unilaterally and against what Europe and Canada and the United States unfortunately are forcing down in Haiti.
Why do you think there's this push for abortion in a country that's so against it?
Yeah, you can only understand. And I think, you know, the chicken obviously roots here in the United States. You know, what do we expect to happen when we legalized Roe v. Wade and pronounced that a country that stands for liberty also condones the killing of the unborn? If we're the ones exporting, you know, resources to the rest of the world, if we're exporting our culture as well, then obviously we're going to be sending some of that stuff over. And so it's, you know, it's a bad message the United States has sent to the rest of the world. I think the reversal of Roe v. Wade should be an indication that it wasn't our entire country that supports abortion. We can certainly end abortion here and continue to be a country that's influencing liberty for the right things. And one of the right things we can push is an end of abortion across the board, certainly not exporting it to a country like Haiti.
Absolutely. What can we do about what's going on in Haiti right now, in you know, particular to this law?
Yeah, two things. I'm encouraged by folks of faith in the United States that have always had an eye towards Haiti. I think even one of your producers here has been to Haiti and helped at the orphanages, helped at these areas that are really preserving the culture of Haiti and its best asset, which are its children and its youth. Continue to pour into your church as it reaches into Haiti, but also let these missionaries know exactly what's at stake. I think that's one way that civil society can come along Haiti, but we can also make the effort through the State Department in an official capacity to say that Haiti needs to reestablish its parliament, needs to have the rule of law, and needs to stop anything from an executive council or a president that wants to put forward a legalization of abortion.
What's the state of Haiti right now overall?
Yeah, well, there's two facets. There are the people that are resilient, that are waking up every morning, continuing to worship God and take care of their families. That's never going to change. That's what Haiti's always been about. But there is instability in the governmental structure and a lack of rule of law. That can be remedied, but once again, it's going to have to come from the people. It's going to have to be a groundswell. And if the U.S. wants to play any impact in there, they have to make sure that we are consistent with what that culture and civilization wants. And abortion is not that.
We're going to leave it right there. Jonathan, thank you so much for coming on today. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And that's going to do it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. Be sure to follow and like us on social media channels. And you can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on X, Facebook, and on Instagram, and sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, EWTN.com/pro-life. And do not forget, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.